Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us this evening. A lot of high school football talk on tonight's program. In Pennsylvania, it's the start of the high school football playoff postseason. And, of course, in the D.C. area, the teams are getting ready for the postseason. The playoffs are still a week away, so we're going to be talking about both Pennsylvania and D.C. high school football and a little NBA talk thrown in as well. So let's introduce tonight's in-studio panel and, of course, the man off to my right in the number one chair and the new president of the United States of America after next week, Mr. Keith Edward Groehler. I'm glad to hear you're running.
Hey, so you know my middle name. How did you know my middle name?
It sounded more presidential to say that. I'm glad to see
you
are running.
Keith doesn't sound quite the same, but I like that.
I like Keg. Kegger.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. If I had known we were going to be stuck with these two candidates, I might have thrown my hat in the ring.
You're kind of like the president of the local Lehigh Valley media. Just on your day off, you can run the country and then stick to sports writing the rest of the week.
I'll think about it. Only if Lynn's my running mate.
All right. Speaking of your running mate, joined here, you're our first repeat guest on the Morning Call edition of this show. Writer for The Morning Call, Mr. Lynn Worthy. Lynn, thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me. I was just hoping for a cabinet position. I didn't know I was going to be a running mate. I'm surprised. I'm honored by the nomination.
I think you got to fill out a form or something, don't you, to get elected? Maybe not anymore. Before we get to the high school football talk, I do have to, for people that are new to the show, we have a Stone Cold Lock prediction, and assuming I remember to get to it at the end of the show and we don't run out of time, we ask our guests to guarantee that something in the world comes true. Well, a little more than 5 years ago, 61 months, almost to the day on this very show, we had J.T. Krinsek, a former Penn Argyle football player, was on the program, and we asked him for a Stone Cold Lock at that time. So let's show the footage from 61 months ago of J.T. Krinsek and his Stone Cold Lock. All right, final part of our show is Stone Cold Lock predictions time. It is where our panelists guarantee something in the world of sports comes true, can be local, regional, or national. JT, we'll start with you, your Stone Cold Lock prediction.
The Cubs will win a World Series before I die.
I certainly hope so. And there you have it. JT, congratulations on nailing your Stone Cold Lock prediction. JT and his family, by the way, no longer living in Penn Argyle. They're down in the Washington, Maryland area. So
hopefully they're picking us up
down
there.
Thanks for Tanya for checking in. We talked with his mom about that before the show.
So you were much younger back then, Chris, by the way.
I was a lot younger. I won't get into reasons why. High school football talk. We're going to start. Next week, we're going to have Steve Miller here. We're going to start with the bigger schools and go downward in terms of size. Since Lynn here is a Colonial League expert, we're going to start this week with the smaller schools and work our way up so that we try to be fair to all the schools involved. So, Lynn, first of all, before we turn our attention to this weekend's playoff games, your overall thoughts on the regular season and any surprises as the season kind of unfolded the last few weeks?
I don't know if there's many surprises. I mean, over the weekend I tweeted out sort of what my predictions were, just sort of based off of, you know, what little information I had and just sort of going off of last year compared to the actual outcomes for the Colonial League. And, Saucon and Notre Dame is what everybody thought was probably going to come down to. Mm-hmm. Southern Lehigh is always a contender in there. Palisades, I think people knew they were going to be good. It was how fast were they going to get there and, you know, whether they – I don't know if people thought they were going to be – you know, a contender. I mean, going down to that last game of the season, they could have had a chance of a share of a conference title, and they lose a 14-7 game. I mean, so I don't know if there was a whole lot of surprises as much as there were just, you know, some of the individual performances, some of the great games. Those are the things that sort of stand out to me. But I don't know if there was one team that you say came out of nowhere and all of a sudden, you know, put up a ridiculous record in the regular season.
And as it turned out, Saucon had to win that game. Blue Mountain won. So Saucon, they could have been co-Colonial League champs and yet not gone into the playoffs, which would have been, you know. You say what you want about the playoff system this year and expanded, but in 4A, that's a really tough bracket.
Yeah, and if you were a little bit bigger of school, then you would have been all set because you would have been 5A and you would have been good to go. But 4A, Blue Mountain sitting there looking at two losses, I think, or was it three losses, and ended up on the outside looking at, two losses, where just like Saucon Valley could have ended up with two losses, share of a conference title, you know, third straight conference title, and been playing in the Eastern Conference championship. So,
Keith, any surprises for you during the regular season?
I think Emmaus has still got to be considered a surprise. I mean, Emmaus has played good football. People thought that they, once they lost that first game to Nazareth, that they maybe would crumble down the stretch. And that was a marvelous performance the other night against Parkland to rise up and get that goal line stand at the end. And
which you got in your on your phone.
Yeah, I was one of my very fortunate to be in that position and get that play because it was well received. But anyway, exciting, very exciting for that town, which has been in the shadows of Parkland, like everybody else in this valley. But particularly Emmaus has been in the shadows of Parkland in just about all the sports. And when we get into winter, it'll be the same thing in basketball.
All right, let's take a look at the playoff scenarios. Again, we're going to start with the smaller schools this week. And Palmerton is the one team in our coverage area that is qualified for the 2A playoff. So they will be matched up against Minersville in a battle of 5-5 teams. The Bombers got everyone healthy. Lynn, I think you pointed out that to me the first time you were here, that Palmerton had some injuries and they were struggling early on, so they played well the second half of the year. And then the 3A matchups, we'll take a look at those in more detail, but just the rundown. Lehighton at 4-6 is taking on Notre Dame at 8-2. Northern Lehigh also 4-6 playing Palisades. And then Tamaqua, their record is 5-5. They're taking on North Schuylkill at 6-4. Jim Thorpe also 6-4, taking on Penn Argyle. So, Lynn, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on Palmerton and the teams in the 3A race.
Well, Palmerton, I think the big thing for them is they really want to make as big a run as possible with the two seniors they have. They have two of the best players in the program's history. You've got a quarterback who's, set passing records for yardage, touchdown passes. Then you've got a running back, Mike Stasko, who, set the touchdown record, who started off, he was one of the guys who started off the season injured. And then against Penn Argyle, a game up at Penn Argyle, just exploded for 5 touchdowns. He had a touchdown catch, or multiple touchdown catches, kickoff return, a touchdown run. I mean, he had 5 touchdowns in that game. And since then, seems like the team's really starting to, put it back together. And the thing I noticed most at the end of the season was defensively, when they come with it on defense, then they're a really tough team to handle, especially against teams their size. I mean, because, you're playing that Colonial League, you get a wide range of teams. But teams about their size, when they play defensively, then you're in for something.
McCaddy, the 2A team, they didn't make the playoffs, but they had several close games down the stretch, especially Notre Dame. They hung in with Notre Dame until the fourth quarter of that game. They had success running the ball, and I think some of the teams like Penn Argyle also had success running the ball against Notre Dame. Is that going to be the recipe if anyone upsets Notre Dame as the number one seed? Is that to try to establish the run and grind out a victory that way?
The definite recipe from watching the games with Penn Argyle, Saucon Valley is going to be to try and limit their offensive possessions as much as you can. Because if you give Notre Dame the ball for, half of the game, they're going to put up points. I mean, no matter how good your defense is, they're going to put up points. I mean, Saucon's one of the better defensive teams in that league. And they put up 24 in that. And then, ball starts raining and the ball squirts out of a guy's hands at the end of that game, or else maybe they have a chance to, put up one more score. So limiting their possessions, keeping the offense on the sideline is going to be your best defense against Notre Dame. But they also have shown, I think, between that Penn Argyle game and the Saucon game, that they handled the run a lot better against Saucon, who is a much bigger team, than they did against Penn Argyle. I think Penn Argyle, part of it was just the, Coach Stambaugh said effort was one of the things that he didn't like about the way they played against Penn Argyle, but they brought it against Saucon. It was a close game. I think really the mistakes are what caused the problems in that game, turnovers. If they don't turn the ball over a couple of times, set up Saucon for some short fields, then they have a better chance to win that game. So if they can limit mistakes and keep that offensive rhythm going, then they're going to be really tough for probably most of the teams they see in 3A in the district.
It's going to be really interesting here because it's basically Schuylkill League, which is what we call a coal region football, blue-collar football against the Colonial League. Last year, we were excited about a matchup, Saucon Valley playing Lehighton, which is undefeated coming out of the Schuylkill League, and Saucon just buried them. So if you're a Colonial League team going against, going against the North Schuylkill or one of these, Lehighton, I guess Notre Dame got Lehighton, you'd be pretty confident, I think, because you know that you play pretty good football in the Colonial League.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody in the Colonial League, especially when you have that wide range, not that, these other teams aren't playing big schools as well, but I think they know that they play against some teams that have talent in all sorts of positions, have size, teams that play different styles as well. That's one of the big things is you've got teams that are power running games, you've got teams that throw the ball, spread offenses, wing tee, option. You get all of that. So there's not a whole lot that you're going to see come playoff time that you haven't already seen. So I feel like most of the teams in that league probably think, you know, especially if you had a good season there, even the teams that are 5-5 like a Palmerton or, you know, even, you know, Northern Lehigh feels like, you know, they were playing their better football at the end of the season.
Teams did rise. You know. Palmerton's won. Palisades, I mean, I know they lost 14-7, but Palisades been playing good football down the stretch too. And you said, watch out for them. They were young, and they seem to grow up in a hurry, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's only one senior in that team.
Wow.
And they've started to sort of expand. I feel like they've grown throughout that season. I remember going out there, I think it was at the midway point in the season, talking to Coach Kevin Ronalds, and I think we were talking about how young they were. And I think I mentioned, I said, well, you know, the second half of the season, you guys might have the most sort of room to grow or the highest ceiling because you have so many young players. And he said, you know, I don't think I ever really thought of it that way. He said, but I might steal that line. So, I mean, and they've proven it. I mean, they had five straight wins going into that game against Saucon and again, lost 14-7. And really, it was, a broken play that led to the last touchdown in the first half that Saucon scored. A screen pass that ended up turning into a big play. It set up a touchdown, and it was 14. And that was the 14th point right there, the second touchdown. Otherwise, it was a pretty much a neck and neck game. And for Palisades, a team that's not, you know, nearly as big as Saucon Valley, they held their own. I'll tell you, and their defense brought it. I mean, you got to feel if you're them, like you can play with anybody you're going to see. And I'm definitely looking forward to the potential matchup with Notre Dame.
Yeah, well, I think they're the team to watch there. I mean, I mean, they might be a sleeper pick to win that 3A bracket. And Kevin Ronalds is a great coach. I mean, he coached at Allen, and he got them to a decent level. And I realize maybe things have changed even since he's been there, which was a decade ago. But Kevin Ronalds did a really nice job and won 4 or 5 ball games almost every year, at least with Allen. Hasn't been done too much lately.
Yeah. And I would love to see a Penn Argyle Notre Dame rematch. Do you think the Pirates could mix things up and beat Penn Argyle and maybe rematch again themselves with Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean they played in the regular season, and at the time both teams were playing well because Penn Argyle had just come off of the win against Notre Dame, and Palisades had won 4 in a row. I think both teams had won 4 in a row at the time. I wasn't there at that game because it was actually the same week as Saucon Valley-Notre Dame, and that was the game that everybody had their eyes on. But I feel like either Penn Argyle or Palisades and Notre Dame, if it ends up being that, should be a heck of a game, a game that a lot of Colonial League fans should have an eye on and should be hoping for, two Colonial League teams for a district title. But, Penn Argyle obviously beat them at Penn Argyle, but for Palisades, I feel like it would be I'd really like to see that game just as an outsider, a spectator in terms of when they played. It was the first week of the regular season, and I feel like both teams have gotten a lot better, a lot more experience. I feel like Palisades has definitely grown a lot from where they were at the first week of the season. So them playing Notre Dame for a district championship would be a great matchup.
If you were a Notre Dame fan, would you be worried right now? Because Notre Dame got off to a great start. Now, they weren't blowing people off the map. We were getting scores like an EPC and like, wow, Notre Dame's in a fight tonight. And they kept winning those games. And then they hit that little snag where they lost, was it 2 in a row or 2 in 3 weeks?
Yeah, they lost two in a row.
Do you think maybe that they're more vulnerable than we think they are?
I don't know if it's vulnerable. I mean, the Penn Argyle game, they just didn't play that well. I mean, that was, there's not any
maybe
way around
ahead.
That. You'd like to think they weren't looking ahead. I know Phil didn't think, that they should have been looking ahead. And he said that was not anything that was talked about and obviously not something they would condone is looking ahead. But they just didn't play well that game. Now, Saucon, that was a good game. I mean, they were in that game. Mm-hmm. And again, without a couple turnovers, then maybe they beat Saucon and the whole league looks different. And maybe Saucon's on the outside looking in terms of the way things went in 4A. But I don't know if I'd say vulnerable, but they definitely know that if they make mistakes, then they can get beat. It's not one of those ones where you can overcome this, that, and the other. You have to play well. You can't make mistakes. You have to play solid football. They know that, but I don't think anybody's scared over there. I mean, I think they know that they've got talent and that they can put up points. And I think if they start off the game well, then it goes from there. If they start off slow, then you might have a reason to worry. Mm-hmm. But if you start off well,
Well, I do believe they're going to be okay with Lee Hyten. Lee Hyten's lost a lot of good kids. Tommy McCarroll does a great job. He teaches at Whitehall. We know him well. But I think they're going to be okay, at least going into the semifinals. And then it gets maybe a little dicey from there.
Yeah, Lee Hyten, I think, you know, I mean, they lost, what was it, their top running back, right. Wyatt, right. The kid there, Clements. And I think if I remember right, they replaced with the whole front seven on defense.
Rebuilding
so,
job
I mean,
there. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, obviously, it's, you know, solid team, played in a tough league, 4-6. But I don't. If I'm, you know, unless you make some mistakes and, you know, give them opportunities over and over again, especially playing at home, I think Notre Dame should feel pretty good about that mm-hmm. game. And then going forward, you know, you see how the matchups go. But if I'm them, I'm not worried about anybody.
All right, our special in-studio guest is Lynn Worthy. We're going to continue the Pennsylvania high school football conversations in just a few minutes. But right now it's time for our trivia question and give you a chance to win tonight's special prize. Tonight's question does involve the NFL and the Eagles playing the Giants this weekend. So we have an Eagles-Giants question for you. Name the first two stadiums in which the first two Eagles-Giants NFL games were played in. You have to go back a ways and correctly identify the two stadiums where the first two Eagles-Giants NFL games were played in. And here's more information as we go to break on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months, but if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, our football preview show before the playoffs start this weekend in Pennsylvania and D.C. The playoffs will be starting a week from tomorrow, and we'll be talking some D.C. high school football in just a little bit. But first, let's bring in our special guest on the phone lines who's going to do some double duty for us. Eric Goldwine, fine writer for the Washington Post covering D.C. football, and he's also a great writer for Hoops76.com with some thoughts on the 76ers. Eric, welcome once again to RCN Sports Talk.
Yeah, glad to be back on. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure. We're going to start with the Sixers a little bit and get to the D.C. Football talk in a moment. First of all, Joel Embiid, I try not to get too overly excited and go all in, but how excited are you of what you've seen in a very limited span so far? I think Patrick Ewing just in the last 24 hours said, Joel Embiid, on what I've seen already, might be the best center in the NBA right now. But what are your thoughts on him and the process finally starting to see some daylight for Sixers fans?
Yeah, you really can't ask for more of him in these last few games. I mean, he's playing 20 minutes a night, and the impact he's making, it's you can tell right away when he's on the court, when he's off of it. He's a 7'2". He's every bit the 7. Some people say they're 7 feet, and they're really 6'10". This guy is 7'2". He's mobile. He's got good hands. He's really, really changing the defense right away. Offensively, you can tell he's still getting used to the fact that he hasn't played team basketball in 3 years, but he's showing flashes. He's doing things that a lot of centers are never able to do in their entire careers. Patrick Ewing is, I don't know if he's the best center yet, but he certainly has the potential to get there.
Eric, they're off to a slow start. 0-4, I think, at this point. I think a couple of the losses. One was a really bad loss where they kind of blew it themselves to Orlando the other night. A couple of the road games have been blowouts. There's such expectation for this team. We think that basketball is going to be relevant again, and professional basketball is going to be relevant in Philadelphia again for the first time in since they've took on the Celtics in the playoffs a couple years ago. What are your thoughts? What can we really expect from this team this year? because, I mean, there's excitement, but right now it looks a lot like the last 3 years.
It is hard to watch at times. The stat going around is they haven't won October or November game since November 22nd, 2013. In the last 2 years, they started 0-17. It's not looking any, if you look ahead at their schedule, I have them circled for, I don't think they're going to be the favorite for the next, three weeks or so.
Wow.
But all that said, you got to remember that A, they're a young team. B, their best player is only playing on the court half the time. C, they're missing a few of their, key pieces in Jared Bayless. He was, and I don't think he's even an average starter by any means, but he is a capable guard who can shoot threes, and he's been out with an injury. And they're also missing Nerlens Noel, who not sure if he'll ever be back in a Sixers uniform again. He had elective knee surgery, which could mean anything from his knee hurting to he is having issues with there being four centers in the lineup. But you gotta remember they're a young team. They're missing players. They don't quite fit yet. You can't if you wanna watch an NBA team win games, this is still not the team for you, not yet at least. But I think a couple months from now, you'll start to see. Assuming Ben Simmons returns, I didn't even mention him. He's the number one overall pick. When he returns, I think you'll start to slowly see some things start together. Of course, this assumes Embiid is healthy, but I think you're going to have to wait a little bit more if you want to watch winning basketball. But you'll see exciting basketball as long as Embiid is on the floor.
Well, Embiid getting out there is a plus, but I mean, the last thing I saw, we're immersed in high school football around here right now, and mm-hmm. And of course the World Series was a bit of a distraction. So, but what I read in the Philadelphia Daily News that Embiid's playing like one game, and then he's going to sit out, and Okafor's going to play one game, and he's going to sit out. Is that what's going on right now?
Yeah, so they're monitoring, and I think they're smart to do so. They're monitoring both of their minutes. They're easing them back into the game. I think Embiid's first preseason game, they only let him play 10 minutes or 8 minutes, and he's kind of increased that 2 minutes every game, and now he's up to 24. They're going to sit them out on back-to-back games like they just did. So the last game against Charlotte, which if you missed it, you didn't miss much. Embiid was sitting, and Okafor got the start. The game before, against Orlando, and Embiid got the start, and Okafor sat. So they're going to do things like that to kind of ease them back into it, because Okafor's also coming off of a knee surgery over the summer, so he's not quite at 100% either. But I think it has the twofold benefit of keeping them, decreasing their chance of injury, and then also giving them each their own playing time as the lone center on the court.
What's the latest on Ben? When can we expect him, if at all, in this season? I mean, I think he's coming back, but is it going to be around midseason? What's the latest on him?
Yeah. So he says he has every intention of playing. It's a 2 to 3 month injury, and knowing how the Sixers handle these type of things, they're gonna lean toward the 3, maybe 4, maybe 5. Month, but I could see him returning around January or maybe late December, maybe early February, around that time, but not in the near future. But I do think that barring a setback, he'll be on the court this season, hopefully, for our sake.
My final question is, I thought initially they had a shot at the playoffs, but so far when they can't win a game, I would think that's because I thought the East was so weak that maybe a 500 record, which I thought they were capable of at one point in time. I thought maybe they can maybe sneak into the 7-8 spot, but is that pretty unrealistic in your opinion, Eric?
Yeah, that's a long shot. I think what does have a realistic chance of happening, and this isn't to say it's got a high probability of happening, but I think it's realistic to think that they, at some point late in the season, will start to resemble a 500 teams. So maybe they'll, and this is no big deal for most NBA teams, but maybe they'll have a 15-game stretch where they go 8-7 and they'll kind of start to have some consistency. And again, they're clearly not there right now. And it's going to require some of their pieces to come together. It's going to require Embiid to still be there. It's going to require Simmons to blend in right away. But I think that this group, as they get older, they have the athleticism, they have the size, they have the raw talent to stick around with not the great teams, but with some of the average teams in the NBA. And hey, with Sixers basketball, that's something we haven't seen in 3 years, 4 years since. It would be refreshing if and when that does happen, and I think it will. It's just a matter of if it's late this season or next.
Our guest for this segment is Eric Goldwein, a fine writer for both the Washington Post and Hoop76.com. Just want to change the subject for a few moments here, and Eric, get your thoughts on some DMV high school football. First of all, two of the great turnaround stories I wanted to ask you about. Blake High School and Walter Johnson High School. Blake was winless last year. Right now, I believe they're 5-4, and I think they are in good shape or have a good opportunity to make the Maryland 3A South playoffs. And Walter Johnson, they have their highest win total since 2010, and I believe right now they tied as many wins the last three seasons combined at this point with one more regular season game to go. Can you talk about those two teams, and what are some of the other good feel-good stories in the DMV region that you've seen?
Yeah. So I got a chance to check out Blake last week. They're not a powerhouse by any means, but they're a fun story. Last year they technically didn't have any wins. It's because they had to forfeit a couple of them, but they still managed to turn it around and get in the playoff this year. They got a local guy, Ty Mason. He's a Temple commit at wide receiver. So those in the Philly area will get to check him out next year, or maybe the year after, depending on when he gets back on the field. But they're a nice turnaround story. Same with Walter Johnson. They won't be in the playoffs, but these teams, they go from they go from 1 to 2 wins to 500, and it's a nice thing. It's nice to see that turnaround. And then there's some of the more powerhouse schools that you hear about year after year. Damascus, they're still undefeated. We got the playoffs coming up in not this Friday, but the Friday, so 8 days from now. They haven't lost a game since I'm going to confuse my years here, but they haven't lost a game since the 2014 state finals, and they're beating teams by 30, 40 points a game this year. They got some exciting players. Marcus Vinson, their running back, he does some, you watch him run and you don't understand how he gets from point A to point B, but he's been making a lot of plays this year. Then in D.C. area, we got a big, we have these powerhouse Catholic schools that are going to go head-to-head over the next few weeks. In fact, if you turn on ESPNU tomorrow, you'll see Good Counsel take on the Matha tomorrow night at 8. So there's some really exciting times, and it's really playoffs in every sport coming up. I'll be going from soccer to volleyball to football back to volleyball over the next few days, and then it's an exciting time here.
Yeah. I want to ask you about some of the individuals, too, that have stuck out in your mind. And I'm not sure if I got the numbers completely right. It might be missing a game here. But Noah Miller at Wooten High School, last I saw, he had 66 catches for 1,000 yards in 7 games. Adrian Platt from Seneca Valley, he has rushed for over 2,200 rushing yards and 38 touchdowns going into last weekend's games. I don't know if you've seen those guys at all, but what are some of the really individual outstanding performances? And I know you already talked about a couple people that have already committed. It seems like there's been a lot of college commitments in the last few weeks down in the DMV.
Yeah. We'll talk about Adrian Platt. I just did a story on him last week. He's on Seneca Valley. You don't often see a high school football player that's been starting for 4 years in the backfield, but he's been putting together 1,000 and now 2,000 yard he's in this year. He's like 5'6". He's not the biggest guy. In fact, I think that's actually his advantage. If you watch him run, he hides behind his lineman and he kind of sneaks through and sprints by him. But yeah, I did a story on him, and what I found out was he credited a lot of his success to video games. He plays these third person shooter games, and those games you get to kind of hide, you get to maneuver around, and he said like that's how he's become such a good running back. So he's putting up the huge numbers. The receiver Noelle Miller, he's had a heck of a year, and he's only a sophomore. Wooten's got this quick fire offense where it's kind of Chip Kelly-esque. I don't know if that's a good thing at this point for Eagles fans, but they go really fast, and I saw a game where he had double digit receptions, so he's having a very good year. Then some other schools in Montgomery County that have gotten to cover have some talented players. Quint Orchard, they got this quarterback, Doc Bonner. I've gotten a chance to see him develop over the last couple years. And last year he was more of a running threat. This year he's showing he can hurt teams in the air too. There's a lot of talent in the area.
Well, Eric, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for doing double duty and letting us pick your brains on both the NBA and high school football.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Eric Goldwine, outstanding writer for both Washington Post. You can also check him out at hoops76.com for all of his Sixers and basketball insights. By the way, an update on the trivia. The trivia question tonight is: name the two stadiums that the first two Eagles-Giants NFL games were played in. We're getting a lot of guesses. All of them are wrong across the board. We have not had a single... we've had some interesting stadiums and fields named as far as our email guesses, but no one has even one right so far. So maybe we have stumped people for now. But that question is still out there, again, looking for the two stadiums where the first two Eagles-Giants NFL games were played in.
Here's a hint. It's not the Link, and it's not MetLife Stadium.
Oh, well, yeah. You really help people out.
Well, try to be an assistant.
All right. Speaking of being an assistant here, Keith Groller has his own segment. It's called Groller's Grumblings, where Keith gets a sound off on anything and everything going on in his mind as far as going on in the world of sports. It can be local, regional, or national. Keith?
A couple different topics. I happened to be on the mailing list for the press conferences at the Eagles. The other day, the wonderful Philadelphia media, I know we have some Philadelphia media people on this show from time to time, and you might consider even the morning call to be part of the Philadelphia media, but 20 questions, the first 20 questions of Doug Peterson were about the Huff situation. How many times can you say, we need to get more facts, we need to analyze? Doug Peterson, I know he doesn't deserve a break after some of the decisions he made in Dallas the other night, but my gosh, 20 questions. And then they went off another topic, and then they came back. Come on. I mean, just if the guy's not going to give you any information, move on to another topic. Just beat a dead horse. Great World Series. I know we're going to talk about it later. Great World Series, but it's a problem when the games end at 12:48. 12:48 is way too late. I think they made a move to get the game started a little bit earlier. How about even earlier, guys? How about maybe going 6 o'clock, 6:30, whatever, because 12:48, classic game. But if people are sleeping, it's not going to help the sport of baseball. And also want to mention that we lost another great person in the local sports community, Betsy Wilson, who did a lot. I mean a lot for District 11, female athletics, a great lady. I remember as a young reporter, she got me straight about, making sure that we covered the girls and giving them their due. And she was a great advocate for female athletics. Of course, female athletics really carry the banner for District 11. When you think about the Emmaus Field Hockey team, the Parkland Girls Volleyball team, all the girls basketball championships we've had over the years, Betsy Wilson at the forefront. We're going to miss her. She died last Friday, and just a great lady. The first lady of District 11 athletics.
I want to echo those thoughts. Betsy was wonderful to be with, especially during softball and field hockey and all those different sports that she was involved in. All right, we have a trivia question we'll get to on the other side of this break. We'll also continue the District 11 playoff previews coming up in just a moment. But as we go to break, there was some extra excitement for the annual showdown between Ballou and Dunbar in the DMV region. Here's highlights from that game as part of our DKN Sports Minute.
This is a DKN Sports Minute. It was a blue and gold affair as the 5-2 Blue Knights hosted the 4-4 Dunbar Crimson Tide on their new home field. The Knights defense went to work early when number 8 Steve Williams picks off Dunbar QB Willie Thorne and takes it to the house. Blue goes up 7-0. The Crimson Tide surge back as Willie Thorne connects on a 45-yard pass to number 1 receiver Jonathan Smith for a score. Point after, no good. Blue up 7-6. But Blue kept pushing. Number 5 Blue QB Keontae Johnson calls his own number on a keeper and charges into the end zone. Knights up 14-6. With just 3 seconds to go before halftime, Blue QB Terrellanta Buchanan launches a strike to number 13 Marcus Forrest. The Blue Knights run away with a homecoming victory, 46-6. This has been a DKN Sports Minute.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Our special in-studio guest, Lynn Worthy, joining Keith Groller from the Morning Call, along with myself. One more time, the trivia question. Name the two stadiums that the first two Eagles-Giants NFL games were played in. We're getting warmer. Some people have gotten at least one correct via the email, but we're still looking for a correct answer. So let's go out to Allentown and check in with Karen, who thinks she knows the answer. Karen, welcome to RCN Sports Talk, presented by the Morning Call.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
Is it Polo Field for the Giants?
What's your other guess? And then I'll tell you if you're right.
Baker Bowl.
Baker Bowl and the Polo close Polo enough. Grounds close is close enough. Yeah, Karen, you got it. Polo Grounds and Baker
Polo
Bowl.
Grounds.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got it. Did you know that one? You are way too young to know the answer to that in person. So
I don't know.
You have to look that up or someone tell you? Are you a Giants fan or Eagles fan?
Eagles.
So you're predicting a win this Sunday?
Actually, the Chargers.
Oh, Chargers. Well, someone likes the Rams. Yeah, it's better than the Rams. Better city there. So, Karen, thanks for playing. We'll be in contact with you after the show.
Okay, I just wanted to say one thing.
Sure thing.
I miss Joe Craig on that show.
Well, he was on the Friday night show. Did you watch him on Friday nights?
Yeah. Well,
did you call and harass him?
No, I will this time.
Okay, because he screens the calls. I could never get through to talk to him. All right, Karen, thanks so much for your feedback.
All right, bye-bye.
Good luck for your Chargers, too. All right, so that question does get answered. Yeah, we had a lot of guesses. Yankee Stadium was guessed, Franklin Field, and some other places that you wouldn't think of. But Polo Grounds, Baker Bowl, not Connie Mack, too. That was another guess, too. Real quick, before we move on to the 4A District 11 playoffs, just want to clarify, make sure I said the right setup for the 3A. The opening round playoffs are Notre Dame versus Lehighton, Palisades versus Northern Lehigh, Penn Argyle versus Tamaqua, and North Schuylkill versus Jim Thorpe. That is the matchup for 3A. At the 4A level, we have Saucon Valley taking on Pottsville. That's a matchup of 2 versus 3. And Central Catholic with an impressive win over Bethlehem Catholic last weekend against Bethlehem Catholic. Those two teams will rematch in the first round of the 4A playoffs. Lynn, we'll start with you and get your thoughts on Saucon Valley taking on Pottsville. And can the Panthers advance to take on either the winner of Central or Becca the following week?
Definitely, if they play the type of defense they've played, last week and down the end of the season. I think talking to Cody Zerinsky, one of their senior captains, big offensive lineman, and I asked him about the difference between the 3 straight Colonial League championships. Mm-hmm. And he was saying the first one, it was more trying to prove the people what they can do and what type of team they can be. The second one he thought was more offense with Evan Culver putting up the, astronomical numbers that he put up last year. And he said this year he felt like it was defense. He felt like the defense was sort of what's carried it for them this season. Chuck Muller taking over a defensive coordinator, coming over from Notre Dame. And, in that game, against Palisades, must win to get into the playoffs, trying to win the conference championship. And it was the defense that really carried the way for them because, they only gave up 7 points. You only scored twice. You had one long drive, and then, as I mentioned earlier, you had another drive where a broken play sort of set you up for a touchdown. And then after that, the second half, it was, they didn't score anything. So they were relying on the guys on defense to hold things up for them. And I think if they can continue to play that way, I mean, even the one loss they had against the Northwestern, they gave up 15 points. One of those was on a touchdown on a kickoff return. So your defense gave up, you know, 8 points. So, I mean, if they bring it defensively, then I think they could advance. What happens after that, you know, we'll see. But it starts with defense for them.
Keith, you had the Becca Central game. Were you surprised by that outcome and how soundly Central won?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 48-14, I never expected that. Now the key is, can Central play as well as they did? Can they sustain that emotional firepower they brought into that matchup? It's tough to play the same team 6 nights later. That's going to be very interesting. Now, Becca's a banged-up football team. Kyle Hawes made that quite clear in the post-game comments. You know, they're going with a patchwork offensive line right now. And Central, because they play in the North, did not get a lot of respect. They beat up a lot of mediocre teams in that division. And they had something to prove. Now Becca's got something to prove. Mm-hmm. This is a football team that, remember, beat Easton, Parkland, Whitehall. Mm-hmm. They beat Liberty. They beat some very good football teams, and they beat them soundly. I expect Becca to come back strong. Now, I think we're going to have the game we expected last week, a toss-up type of game, because I can't see Central laying it on them like they did the first time.
Now, the big question between you guys to fight out, Saucon Valley, do they face Central Catholic and Becca? And if so, who wins? Because Saucon Valley last year with the impressive win over Bethlehem Catholic, Colonial League got the bragging rights. Can they do it a second year in a row? What do you guys think?
I know there's going to be a lot of emotion spent this Friday night. I think Central and Becker are pretty good football teams. I think Saucon took maybe a little bit of a step back from where they were. When you lose Culver and all those good guys that they had last year, I think they're not quite as strong, but who knows? One-shot deal, anything can happen. I mean, no one thought they would beat Becca last year. At least a lot of folks didn't think they'd beat Becca, because remember, in 2014, they were crushed by Becca in the district final. So no one saw that coming last year, and they played great defense again. Great defense, shut down a very potent Becca attack. Maybe they can do it again. But this Central team with Darnell Farrell, if they get Central with Darnell Farrell, who scored 40 touchdowns, he's somebody that nobody, maybe with the exception of Freedom, has corralled this year.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that I couldn't make Saucon the favorite. But I think one thing that I'll give them is that I feel like they might have as much firepower as they've had all season at the end of the season now. They had to keep winning to be able to get in, playing for their playoff life down the end of the season. But Nate Kays, who was their starting running back at the beginning of the season, got hurt 3 weeks in. It just came back at the end of the season. So now the guy who was filling in as your starter ran for, I think it was 1,300 yards, and Zach Petit. And now you get Kays back. The passing game, I mean, you know, they run, maybe think about passing, run, and then maybe throw a pass. That's the way that they go, and it works. They sustain drives. Now, but the passing game, you know, Alston Wolf had been pretty much, you know, about 75% of the passing game. One of the things that I liked about the game against Notre Dame is you saw Corey Kemmerer, another option in the passing game, come up with big plays. So I feel like if you get more people involved in the passing game, you got another running option, that bodes well for them. But I still don't know if I'd say that I'd give them, make them the favorite to win that second round game. But I think that bodes well for them, along with the fact that they've played as well defensively as they have most of the season.
One more note on that one. Now, remember last year, all the motivation was on Saucon's side. Nobody thought they were going to win. If it is a rematch, if Becca does get by Central Catholic in their rematch this week, Becca is going to be breathing fire. That the wheels started coming off, I mean, you know, after that loss. And, you know, it just was a bad scene at Becca after that loss to Saucon. Yeah. They really have that's the matchup they would love to have if they're fortunate enough to beat Central. They just feel like they were the better team, did not play well that particular day. They'd have a lot to prove. That could be a tough matchup for Saucon if they get Becca or Central. Because let's face it, Colonial League always is the underdog against the EPC-type teams for the most part.
All right, real quick, I want to look at the 5A. East Stroudsburg North at 3-7, taking on Whitehall at 6-4. East Stroudsburg South at 5-5, taking on Southern Lehigh. I bought my ticket to the Southern Lehigh Whitehall District Championship game back in June. So is there any reason why I should seek a refund or any reason why we don't see a Zephyr-Spartan matchup in the district championship?
I think South has got a chance. I think South is playing much better. They were a 1-5 football team. Jake Cirillo is their quarterback. He's a big, strong quarterback. He's about 6'6". Big, strong kid. They've scored. They have a lot of weapons. South has had a lot of weapons. But just like you said about Central, these North teams have to prove themselves. The North teams have not fared well in the postseason. South was a 1-5 football team, but they played much better the second half. Now they haven't beaten anybody of great note, but they're playing better football. They're 5-5. They have a couple weapons there. I don't know if they could stop Southern Lehigh, but I give South a puncher's chance to win that football game.
Lynn, no refund here, right? Southern Lehigh, why don't?
First of all, the quarterback can be as big as strong as he wants, but what Southern Lehigh has is speed and lots of it. That's the thing that I think sets them apart. Between Tim Walter, Luke Strauss, some of the receivers that they have, they have balance offensively. I mean, and Logan Edmond is really efficient at quarterback. I mean, for a sophomore quarterback, I want to say the number is 16 touchdowns and only 3 or 4 interceptions. I mean, running that offense. I mean, they have speed. They have balance. I don't see them slipping up in that first round game. Second round is another story. The first round, I don't see that. I don't see that happening.
All right, Robert, Carl, Andy, Weaver, Mindy, Edward, and one other person want to hear a Nazareth Parkland preview and our guests' predictions. We'll get to that right after we take this final timeout. District 11 3A Field Hockey Championship was held last night. Sports Talk videographer Alyssa Scheckler was on hand for highlights and post-game interviews of another historic win by the Emmaus Field Hockey team.
I couldn't be happier with the outcome of the game. Stroudsburg came out really competitive, but we know from the last time we played them that we couldn't stand back on our heels anymore. We had to play a full 60 minutes, and I think that's exactly what we did.
It was a well-played game. It was kind of, you know, a little nerve-wracking.
We played them twice before. The second time was definitely tough. They had us up in the first half 1-0, but we knew that they were going to come out hard tonight, and we came out mentally prepared. We all took a deep breath before we stepped out on the field, and we really put our game together tonight. We prepared at practice, on the drive here, on the field before the game, and we came out, and honestly, I believe that half of the game is all mental preparedness, and we definitely came, and we were all really calm and relaxed.
That's the most competitive team that we played so far. We haven't gone into overtime yet, so we'll see when we get to the state tournament. There's always those people that say, like, you don't want to be that team that breaks the streak. So I'm really proud of us for, you know, keeping the pressure under us. We supported each other, and we didn't let it get to us, I feel like, and, you know, that's all that matters.
I'm excited for the girls that they've achieved a conference title, and now we can prepare for states.
One of our assistant coaches said, it's like stacking blocks on top of each other, but we only need to focus on one game. We've won 22 games this whole season. We haven't lost any, and we pulled off another win tonight.
Final segment of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. Again, Steve Miller is going to be here next week. We're going to start with the 6A schools and spend more time with the bigger schools and go down the list since we started with the smaller schools this week. But also, for Lynn and Keith, all of your predictions for the 6A, check out tomorrow's Morning Call or morningcall.com. But Parkland-Nazareth, I got all these people that are guessing Parkland-Nazareth scores. Mindy and Andy, by the way, are picking Nazareth, surprisingly. But who do you like in that game?
I like Parkland to bounce back, although I think, Travis Stefanik is a scary guy. I mean, he makes some great plays. I saw him tear apart Emmaus, but I think Parkland will bounce back. They still play very good defense. I think they'll make enough plays with Jahan Wirth. I think the loss to Emmaus has got to get them fired up, if anything will. Tim Montzman knows how to bring a team along at this time of year. I look for Parkland to bounce back, but a very competitive game.
All right, again, check out the Morning Call tomorrow for all the predictions with 6A and all the other scores as well. All right, final couple of minutes. I want to get these guys' thoughts on the World Series. And do you think a record-setting ratings for Game 7, this was, I think, the most watched World Series game since 1991 when the Braves were in with the Twins, and they had that great Smoltz versus Morris matchup. Will this bend the tide? And we've seen fewer ratings, less people interested. The average age of a baseball fan is now 68, which is the biggest of all professional sports. Will this game and this series bring back the younger audience? Lynn, what do you think about this?
In Chicago? Sure. I don't know about, you know, countrywide. I feel Chicago, especially with all the excitement surrounding the World Series and them winning the first time, breaking the curse. I mean, I grew up in Massachusetts, so when things finally went their way with the Red Sox winning the World Series, I mean, a lot of people got on board, a lot of the sort of casual fans and everything like that, but I don't think that it's necessarily going to ripple across the country.
As a Cardinal fan, I got to ask you, was there a game last night?
Oh, come on. You got to get on
the Cubs. I was watching the Country Music Awards. Now, look, here's the thing about the Cubs.
The greatest baseball game.
It's all over now. The lovable losers, the Chicago, it's all, you're just another team.
They'll be back next year.
You're just another team. I don't want to hear about, first of all,
you are biased.
No such thing about a curse. They stunk for most of those 108 years. That's why they didn't win a championship. No Bartman, no Goat.
Charlie Sheen.
You know, I don't want to hear about the curse of the Bambino.
I grew up in the area. I was not my team.
When you're bad, you're bad. I don't want to hear about curses.
You're biased. You're not being objective. Let's move on. Topic number two. Did Eagles make the right move, a surprising move, after getting behind him, saying we're just going to give him a big hug, sing Kumbaya, and get behind him, and he's going to play Sunday? Now they say they're going to cut him. Was that a good move? Lynn, smart move by the Eagles to cut him the way that they did, too, and the timing.
To me, it seemed like they were trying to stand behind him, at least initially, and then, you know. Then, so to cut him, I mean, which one are you doing? Was it just a PR move? Was it, you know, was it one of those things where if he had been putting up some big numbers, then, oh, we'd look the other way? I mean, to me, if you're going to stand by him, stand by him. If not, then come out right away and say, all right, we can't have this, and then cut him right then.
We got to go. You're a Cardinal fan, so we'll just skip you. We'll be back next Thursday night with another high school football preview edition of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. Good night, everyone.